Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to The Real Pink Diaries, a podcast about the beautiful chaos of figuring it out as you go.
Hosted by three close friends, each episode creates a safe space for honest, unfiltered conversations about the in-between moments of adulthood.
From building businesses to setting boundaries, we're here for all of it. With humor, vulnerability, and heart, it's not always polished or perfect. It's The Real Pink Diaries.
I am honored to welcome Krista, celebrity interior designer, founder of Krista and Home, and former host of HGTV and the DIY Network's Vanilla Ice Project. Krista is known for crafting ultra-high-end interiors that blend timeless design with bold, livable luxury. Her creative journey has taken her from performing on camera to designing spaces for people's dream lives. Along the way, she's built a multidimensional career shaped by both artistry and entrepreneurship. Today, we step behind the curtain to explore how Krista's diverse experience has shaped her into a creative leader, one who continues to grow and evolve while building not just beautiful homes, but a beautiful life.
Welcome.
Wow, guys. That I just let that wash over me. That felt so good to hear how amazing I am. Thank you. No, it is such an honor to be here with all of you.
Yeah.
I'm excited to jump in.
And I'm excited to be amongst designers. And, you know, that type of background is very fun to have.
Oh, yeah. I feel we're starting something very special today that's going to last a lifetime.
Yes.
I hope.
Let's talk about manifestation.
Let's bring it into reality.
Well, so we like to talk about the woman behind the business first. So we're going to get into your childhood a little bit and ask, what was it like growing up in a larger family with you? You have sisters, right?
I have three older sisters.
Oh, you're the youngest.
I am the youngest. Wow. That tells you a lot right there, right? Okay. Everybody always says, oh, the youngest. Mm-hmm, got it.
Yeah.
I think that helped me to learn how to thrive in chaos.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I think that was really where it all kind of started for me, like understanding, knowing it was like me and my sisters. And at one point, my grandmother all shared one very small bathroom.
Wow.
One small bathroom all among five women. Okay. And I will tell you, at one point, I never got to get into the bathroom. I never got to do my hair. And at one point, my mom just cut all my hair off, so I looked like a boy. And I swear to God, at that point, I said, this is where I take control of who I am, what I wear, and what I look like for the rest of my life.
I bet you're very efficient getting ready.
Very efficient getting ready. Yes. But I think it taught me how to work in teams. It taught me how to love and respect women, groups of women. Collaboration of women. And I think that's kind of where all that began.
Wow. So the youngest, the one that has to carve her own way, because everybody else has claimed other roles in the family, and you kind of had to pave your own a little bit.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I was up for the challenge. You know, I'm a little bold. I'm a little brash. You know, I think have a relatively like positive outlook on life. Mm-hmm, so I think that served me well. Especially during those early days where I was just trying to figure out who am I, what am I going to be amongst all of these other people and their big personalities.
So talking about who you wanted to be, what drew you to acting? Because that was your first path into adulthood and what you wanted to do.
It's so funny you say that because my sister, my oldest sister, was like the conductor, the lead singer of the rock band, the star in whatever performance we were putting on. We were our own little like stage company at home. And I think that's really where it all started. But I was always a backup singer. I was always the drummer. I was always, I could never be like the lead singer. You know what I mean? So I think that was like, I'm going to get there someday.
It's going to happen. I'm going to do my own thing.
Yeah. Yes. That drive of like, I'm shining the light on others right now because I'm the backup. And now I want to step into the light and be my own person. So let's do it on camera.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's where it started.
Oh, that's beautiful. So then you went to New York City. Is that how you went out?
How was your evolution? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting because I started out actually doing catalog modeling.
Okay.
What?
And
how do you do catalog modeling?
You're so versatile.
How do you end up in the local Sears catalog?
I was actually in like something like the Sears catalog. It was called JCPenney. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I was just young. I was in the Miss Connecticut pageant. I was like, I'm going to get out there and show the world what I've got. And it led me to New York City. We had a lot of family in New York City. My family had restaurants in New York. We had friends in New York. And when I was a teenager, I used to go there all the time and visit them. And so that's kind of where the modeling started. I had a friend who was a photographer. She introduced me to an agent and that kind of, I never was like a, you know, fancy runway model because I'm not tall enough and apparently not good looking enough, but I could handle the catalog work, which was the money, which was nice.
I tried to talk to them when we had to do pictures. We were like looking at like photographers and stuff for the podcast in the beginning. I'm like, we can go to the JCPenney's. We can go to JCPenney's and do some amazing pictures. We probably should still do that. Krista, do you want to join?
Yes! I love this idea. Oh, I can show you guys all the tips and the tricks for the poses.
I don't know, right?
The right way to hold your chin, all of those things.
Yeah. Random side note that my dad was in the garment center. So we had a lot of like the models come in, wear his clothing and stuff. It was very fun.
Yeah.
Growing up in that background. It's and I find that having that type of background is important for bringing it forward to what you tend to do later on in life. I feel like they build on each other. So
I want to interrupt for a second. What was your mindset? Because I feel like you are very versatile. You're a very strong woman, go-getter, very hardworking person. How that mindset evolved over the years. But I feel like in the very beginning when you decide, oh, I want to do acting and I want to do this and just went for it before even feeling like fully ready to do so. How was your mindset and how did it evolve to later in life?
That's such a great question because I'm someone who always says no. Oh, I'm restarting that. I'm someone who always says yes, even before I know what the answer should be or what the, say yes before I even know what the question is, you know, and it drives my team crazy because we'll get all kinds of, you know, propositions for not only clients, but, you know, potential partnerships and, you know, even the acquisition we had recently. It's just, I am just like, yes, why not? Let's see where this takes us. You know what I mean? I'm a risk taker, I think, at heart. And so I get excited about possibilities. So the answer is always yes, even though I don't really know what the question is.
Do you ever get scared? Because like when we were starting this podcast, it was like, oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
And then we started to think about like how to podcast. And that's when I started to get scared. You know, like when the logistics of like how to do this, you know, sets in.
I'm terrified all the time. I am always scared. I actually was on a panel yesterday with a really famous architect in Miami. And he said, every time I get a new job, I'm completely terrified. And I feel like that kind of fear is what propels success at times if you use it in a positive way. Yeah. And I think that's also where the yes comes in, even when potentially the answer could or should be no. I like to explore the possibility first and then decide, okay, is this right for me or not? And fear is a driver in that.
Like I was afraid to go to my high school reunion and then I decided to take over the high school reunion and make it my damn party.
Oh, yes.
And so then I wasn't afraid. It was my event. You know?
That's an amazing strategy. And I think that's also a really great way to say to yourself, I'm going to jump into this, but I'm going to be the driver. You know, I'm going to control it in one way or another, because I think the loss of control is what is most fearful for people, for the average human being. So I think having more control in that environment is what helped you to say, I've got this. I can do this.
Yes.
So talk about you saying yes. You went from, okay, acting to, what was the pivot? What was in your mind to make you say, you know what? I want to try interiors. I want to go for it. I want to go to Parsons. Like, what was that all about? How did that even come about?
It's funny because things just kind of naturally continued to happen and flow. And I think part of that was my, you know, me saying yes to things as they came my way. I was acting. I went to in New York. I had an agent. I went to LA to do some auditions. And while I was there, my agent said to me, I said, God, I'm not booking. Please. I need some money. I don't want to wait tables anymore. What can I do? He said, you should do TV hosting because those gigs are easier to get. They're quick money. And, you know, there's a lot more of those jobs available. So I said, okay, great. So he sent me on my first TV hosting audition. It was for Save My Bath. I booked it. And then, of course, that was where history began in television.
Yeah. So then Save My Bath and then Splurge and Save and then Food Network's interior design expert on Restaurant Impossible and then the Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, you definitely.
But during, but during all of that, you were also like, there was some cue, there was some reason, like, okay, interiors.
Yeah. Well, I, at that point on HGTV, the hosts were just hosts. They weren't actually practicing designers. Now they're all practicing designers with some type of experience. And the stories about them, their expertise, and usually their family life, right? That's how HGTV's formula has shifted. Back then, we were just hosts. So there was a complete art team. There's a creative team. There were designers behind the scenes. And I was playing a designer on television. So being immersed in that environment, I realized I really love this. I started contributing to the art of each one of the episodes and realized I can really be good at this. And then I said, okay, if I'm going to be a badass, I better get a badass education. And that's when I went to Parsons.
Wow.
And that's why you said, let's do this again.
Yes.
And a bigger risk and just change everything you've known until then. You had a great career acting. I mean, you've done several shows at the moment. You were hosting to say, okay, I'm going to just completely go and go to school for design and really make a career out of it. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, be taken seriously at the end of the day, right?
It's tough, right? Yeah. Because you start out as one thing and transition into another. I like to say it's like the Posh Spice syndrome, right? Where, you know, I started out as a DIY, you know, television host in DIY design. Designing for television is different than designing for very high level celebrity type clientele who have needs that go far beyond what you could ever imagine in television. And there's no DIY happening there. So that transition also took time. But just like Posh had to become Victoria Beckham with a couture line of, you know, fashion. And her expertise shifted. But, you know, you surround yourself with the right people and the right environment, the right mentorship, and you can get there, which is what I did.
So mentorship, was there any mentorship that led you towards entrepreneurship? Like, what was... You're now a designer. You have your pedigree. You know what you're doing. You feel confident. You have all these celebrity clients, maybe not at the exact time, but you had, well, clients to help you through the process. But now you're like, okay, I'm going to start a business now.
Well, did you feel confident at that point? I guess she's saying she's
well,
assuming
you felt like it.
She was confident. But did you feel confident?
I think we all struggle with confidence. Mm-hmm, there's moments of great confidence. There's moments of immense fear. I failed a lot and picked myself back up and got going again. And I continue to do that. I'm growing as a human being. I'm growing as an entrepreneur. But, you know, as far as getting into to being an entrepreneur and knowing it's time to run a business, that shift had to happen if I was going to be taken seriously as a business owner and as a woman in an environment, architecture, interior design, construction, development, really driven by men. Right. That's our world. So I needed to get the education. I needed to learn and understand what it meant to run a business. I needed to be able to go toe to toe with these people in these rooms and be able to hold my own.
Yeah.
And I learned that very quickly that, yes, I have street savvy, but I needed to back it up with the real thing.
So that's where the I need to go get the education. I need to go to a rigorous program like Parsons. Parsons is, for all those who don't know, Parsons is not one of the easy schools. It is. And at the same time, when you were at Parsons, you said you were pregnant during that period?
I was pregnant. Actually, I was doing television up until the point I was showing. So I was going to school and I was pregnant and I was shooting shows. I know. You guys are like,
Come on,
we're women. We can do this shit.
Do it all.
We are superheroes.
Oh my God, you're like the Energizer Bunny. I was like dead. The first trimester, I was like tired all. Like I was just horizontal for most of that. Like I have no idea how you did that. That's amazing.
Thank you.
How do you manage to do that? Motherhood. Your firstborn and just with all these goals and ambitions and dreams that you had and a hard school to go to, not the easiest path.
So true. I went into that room when I had to present my portfolio. No real design experience. No idea how this was going to go in front of this panel of like some of the most posh and well-known designers in New York City of all cities. How am I going to get into this school? And I literally put on my hype song and I said, this is about confidence. And that's what you have to do. A lot of the time it's like, you know, you have to play the part in order to be the part.
Is it true? Fake until you make it? Is that true?
A little bit. A little bit. Yes.
So that was this propensity to say yes and to leap without necessarily knowing where you're going to fall. And you know, this desire and awareness to know that you need the, I want to say pedigree.
Yeah, that's works.
Or the education to, you know, hold your own in addition to the, I'm sure the acting skills, but be able to play the part, the fake it until you make it. Then you were like, you were just off to the races at that point.
Absolutely. And when you're in New York City, I don't know if you guys have ever lived there, but, you know, well, your family's from there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you ride a wave of constant energy in Manhattan. Like, I felt like I was amongst my people there, you know. So that's part of it. As you guys know, you went to SCAD. At Parsons, they don't teach you how to run a business.
Correct.
Yeah. This is about art. This is about the beauty and the technique. And there's a deeper understanding of what design and architecture is at that level of learning.
Yeah.
So I had to learn on my feet. I had to read the books. I had to listen to the podcasts. My husband is an entrepreneur in the tech space, but I learned from him. He became a great mentor to me, actually. One of my teachers at Parsons, who ran a very successful business, met with her, and I looked around wherever I could find people to help educate me on what it meant to run a business, because it's completely opposite to being an interior designer. It's two different worlds.
I understand. But at the same time, I feel like being a business owner, you have to be savvy. You still use that design thinking process that you learn to solve business problems. And like you were saying, like just reaching out to these people, that's a design thinking process. Okay, I've got a problem. I've got to solve it. Who around me can help me solve those problems? And you were also fearless at that point to reach out and, you know, and honest enough to say, I need help. Will you help me? Not a lot of people do that.
Asking questions, just moving forward, being ready to, and just also allow people to help you. Just create the space so they feel comfortable. They want to help you to succeed. So you were in New York. How Florida happened? How do you make it here? What's the next phase of that?
Well, I got pregnant a second time.
Okay. Number two. Here we go.
Yes. And actually, we moved here when I was literally 8.5 months pregnant.
Oh, my God.
I had no doctor. I had no hospital. Yes, we moved, came down here. My husband's family lives here. So that was kind of the driving force.
Okay.
And so we came down and we were like, let's get out of New York City. It's just hard with one baby. Imagine two. Now I have friends that are still there that have two children and, you know, have Manhattan kids, right? Which it's possible.
Yeah. Everything is possible.
I have the logistics of having a kid in New York City and just like, if you have to take a stroller on the subway, you know, or if you have to go upstairs to your building, like it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's walkable. But at the same time, the logistics of that could be very difficult.
Well, how about doing that with another one in the belly? And that was really because we just got this huge snowstorm. I had my baby in the stroller, trying to manage the streets, my belly out to here. Mm-hmm. And my husband was just like, I came home exhausted. He's like, we have to go. Let's just go. So we did it. We took the leap.
And it, you know, fruitful.
Very fruitful. Yes. My first clients down here.
You had your company at that time already.
Yes.
You had the company. Okay.
Yeah.
And you were doing jobs at the time in New York. You were pregnant with your second children. And then you come here and then you start getting kind of restart the business in a sense, right? You start getting new clients and all of that. How was that?
It's, you're right. There is a New York connection to Florida. So there was a propensity to say, okay, this, I know these people. I can figure this out. You know what I mean? It's not like being out west or down south, right? Where it's a different sensibility all around. And knowing and understanding that framework was helpful. But you're right. Like when I was in New York, my first client was my talent agent. She knew I was not a designer. Like she of all people knew I was not the one designing on the show. And she gave me a shot and I grew my business from there in New York City. Then I came down here and I was like, okay, I know some of these people from Manhattan. I can reach out. They have homes down here. But it was really my family, my husband's family, also from New York, New Jersey area, who introduced me to a lot of their friends from up in the Northeast. I did a couple of rooms in their house out of the kindness of their heart. And then, of course, every single time they had a dinner party or happy hour, I would just show up.
That's amazing. Can I just say, your propensity to have the confidence to be like, let me show you what I've done. But also, honestly, having the vulnerability to ask for the help and can I do this room? Like that combination of, you know, the go-getter and the vulnerability really does pave the way for success, I find.
Oh, I think so. I think vulnerability is key to all of this. I think that we're better leaders if we're vulnerable. I think we're more honest if we share our vulnerabilities with not only our clients, but the team. And we share those things together because we have to be real at the table with each other.
Yeah.
And that's the only way to make an honest career. And it's the only way for me to be able to put my, you know, head on the pillow at night and feel good about where I am in the world. You know, just that honesty and that living in the moment in who I am at all times as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, as much as possible. Yeah. stay grounded and just be open for help and just be creative in ways where you can reach out to people. And do you have any other recommendations where you say for someone who is starting an interior design company, what would be the top three things you'll say they should be doing right now?
Well, I actually went back and taught at Parsons.
Oh, so wonderful.
And I taught obviously young designers. And I also have a mentorship program at Krista Home. And so we have young designers coming through the doors all the time. And so I do get that question a lot. And I think the one thing that I always start with, especially in my classes and when I have a new intern starting at Krista Home, is what kind of designer do you want to be? You have to decide what is at the end of this journey so that you can write the journey. So, and that can be, I just want to be a one-woman show. I just want to run a small, you know, design firm. And I want to take on a few projects a year. And this is going to be, and it's about craftsmanship. And it's not about money. The other side of that is design world domination. So, and there's, you know,
that was, and by the way, and then we will dominate.
But there's everything in between. You know, do you want to practice with a few? Do you want to have an architectural edge? Do you want it to be more about decor? Do you love found items? Do you love, antiques? Like, where do you see yourself? What kind of designer? What kind of business? That has to be the kernel of the beginning of how you write your professional journey. And so that's always where I start. And I think that leads to other questions, of course. But I always say, come back and tell me after you've thought about it. I'm going to give you 10 days. Tell me where you landed. And then now we can discuss how we get there.
That is such a designer perspective on business. Because talking about like the idea of the partie, like when you're in school, the idea of the simple sketch to explain your concept of what you're doing. That's literally what you just said, is like you need to understand the vision behind why you're doing what you're doing.
And that's so true. I find that to be so true.
It's you're right. Yeah. It's about vision. It's about visually seeing things, yeah, right? That's how we solve problems as creatives. Mm-hmm.
Has there been something that has continually came up in design, a continuing theme that has occurred from when you were, you know, a baby designer, let's call it, to like now being this successful entrepreneur with a team and all this other stuff? Is there like a common thread among everything that has, you know, shaped you in what you're doing?
I think it's really a difficult business. I find it to be a business that takes not only creativity. Yes, we're solving problems constantly all day long, all kinds of problems. I have staff problems. Who's pregnant? Who's sick? Mm. Who's traveling? Who's going through a divorce? You know what I mean? And the same with the clients. Yeah. Like, everybody brings their life to the table. Mm-hmm. And that becomes really difficult, right? Because that those become the things that get in the way almost of the journey. And I try to, at the end of every day, embrace the fact that these are human beings. I have to bring my humanness mm-hmm. to the table with them, to meet them. And they need to know they're understood and that I'm listening. Mm-hmm. And that way we can continue to move forward, because those types of things are the ones, those types of, you know, elements get in the way. How do we forge a path forward when we've got lots of boulders in the road?
I'm managing people. That's a whole different world. So what was your vision? You say, I want a company with employees, a team. I want to build something big, impactful. When that happened, that you realized that's your vision and that's how you want to get. And now, can you tell us where you are?
Well, I think I'm at a place where I'm probably working a little too much.
I think you've always been there. Just let's be honest.
Yeah, let's be honest. It's hard
Okay.
Baby, TV, school, crazy.
The only difference now is that maybe your kids are a little bit older and maybe they can see it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I really push hard for certain things to keep life balanced. Mm-hmm. I shut my phone off at 5 o'clock every day. And I do work on the weekends, but I only work a certain amount of hours so that I can spend time with my kids. Mm-hmm. And I shut my phone up at 5 because I cook dinner for the kids every night, for the family every night.
I love that. So you are a good cook. Okay.
I'm trying. I'm trying to be a good cook. Because cooking is all about solving problems too. Yeah. So,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Going back to your vision of like the type of business that you saw for yourself, this full service luxury, what is that? How did you find that for yourself? Like, why that for you?
And also, when did you decide to go the world domination route?
Yeah.
and an additional question I'm worried about. Like, so when did you actually start to grow your team? Because when you relocated from New York to Florida, I was wondering, like, did you have a team then? How did that look like transition?
That all happened organically. But again, I always knew design world domination was my journey, was my goal, right? Mm-hmm. And so I keep my eye on that prize at all times. So any decision I make is based on that. Growing the team based on the goal. Mm-hmm. You know, doing an acquisition with a large corporation, definitely getting to the goal. And, you know, at that point, it becomes, and it's not just design world domination, it's standing in my skin as an expert and being proud of the legacy that I've built. Mm-hmm. That's really what that means and what that is. You know what I mean? I want my kids to look up at me and say, that's my mom, and be proud and know they could do it too, you know?
Yeah.
And the same with my husband, you know? I mean, our core people, the ones that love us the most, no matter who we are and, you know, how hangry we get. Like, at the end of the day, it's about inspiring them and being connected with them. So,
yeah. So what did that acquisition provide for your vision and goal? What did it do for your business and your life as a family?
Well, I think you guys know that running your own business creates a lot of financial risk, mm-hmm. right? Personal risk. And we had built something pretty amazing. The systems were all working. The processes are in place. It's running like clockwork, right? But at the end of the day, if we don't have regular lead generation and we mm-hmm. don't have a pipeline that's continually feeding us new business then the personal money has to go back into the company. That risk is hard to take when you're running your own company, especially at the level that we were running it. Now, we ended up figuring out a way to be really successful. One of the most successful profit-wise of any interior design company in South Florida. That wasn't easy to do. At that point, my husband and I said, maybe we should be looking at these people that are reaching out to us saying, we'd like to acquire you. Mm-hmm. We just became valuable. Mm-hmm. And that took pain, suffering, blood, sweat, tears to get there. But we got there. And at that point, I said, we don't want this risk anymore. We want an infrastructure that is solid, that is sound. And we also want to be able to call in the forces of the corporation when we need them. And that was kind of the reasoning behind it.
So it gave you a lot more resources.
For sure.
Like what are, I like the nitty gritty, like what are the resources? What are the resources? Like how does, so you were acquired by Vesta Homes in 2005. So like
2025. Yeah.
Sorry. Dude, not 2005. 20 years ago. No, I mean, but what are, what? What are
that
the,
was just last year.
What, 2026?
What are like the things that they provide
the
to
value
your,
that they provide to you?
And what was also I have a question. What was important to keep close to home that didn't change within that acquisition? Like you are still the face of your design firm. So how do you maintain that within an acquisition that gives you all these resources? Like, I mean, bravo, you figured out exactly your vision and you went for it. But how do you, I guess, contracts, like getting someone who understands contracts really well?
Well, my husband's a lawyer, so okay, he does all the contracts. You know, listen, it was 8 months of writing pros and cons lists on, is this right for us? It was a long process to say, is this going to be all we want it to be? Mm-hmm. And is it going to serve us at the end of the day, right? So that's a long list of things, right? And we found at the end there were more pros than cons, and we went for it. And part of the structure of the acquisition is we are the couture house of interior design within Vesta Home.
Got it.
So we needed to hold our identity for that reason and for the reason of we're not that, we are this within that.
Yes.
And but we still have to stand alone in the brand and identity because that's how we continually bring in the business.
Yeah.
Now, the help that they give us is sometimes they give us, well, they took over all of our HR, which, thank you. Thank you. Okay. And which is very nice. If we need any IT help, if we need graphic design help, if we need, if we get clients that aren't right for us, we refer to other divisions in the company. We get their support when it comes to realtors and developers that they know, their contact list, their people of record. It's just a collaborative environment. Mm-hmm. And the company is nationwide, right? Over 300 employees.
Oh, wow.
If we need something, we can find someone there that can help us. We even have like a CRM expert that now is helping us with our back end. So all of those things are great to have. It's like having mentorship, you know, for each division of our company. And that really does help.
I understand now your team's pain points of you always saying yes, because now you have this confidence in this whole Rolodex of, you know, support going on behind you.
We're the couture house and the,
I love that.
And the making the bespoke projects that then you can then influence the ready wear lines.
That's right, girl.
And then you do the purses and shoes that are like the everyday products that people sell or
thank
purchase.
You. Yes.
So like the products, then Vesta Homes by Krista gets on Target shelves.
I love this. I love where you're going. Yeah, this is design world domination you're speaking of. Yes.
I just found it.
No, you're fine. Just a vision
for it. But, yes. But I'm also thinking like, if they took over HR, but for your team, this was also a benefit because it links them up. I know I've always been desired to work at like a smaller company. That's always I'm what Amy would say is a kind of a small firm girly.
You're a small hometown girly.
Yeah. So, but like you know, working at a small company comes with limitations. Like, you don't have, maybe the insurance isn't as good, or maybe they don't offer insurance. Maybe the retirement is not as robust. So that probably brought a lot of opportunities for your team as well to have all of this backing of the company.
Yeah, I think that we're working with a larger infrastructure that can give us a more positive edge in the market. And those types of things go along with it, right? And the employees, I'm going to tell you, though, it was very scary. It was very hard. The team was horrified and terrified, and so was I. I mean, it was a lot of trying to get above water for months to figure this out. Like, it was brand new, and most people are not like, leap before you learn, like I am, okay? Not that I went into this acquisition without knowledge and without knowing exactly what we were getting and the negotiations of getting to a place where we were happy. But they had no idea this was going on. So one day they're like, oh, we are now acquired.
I mean, introducing it to your team is a big part of that. Yeah, yes. I can understand.
Yeah. And no matter how much confidence I bring to that room, everybody's sitting in their own fear.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
So you just have to lead them through it, right?
Yeah.
Got to put on your cheerleader attitude and just be like, it's going to be amazing. You don't even know what you don't know. Let's go.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I think that's probably the hardest part of what I do. And that is when I feel defeated, when I'm having a tough day, when I've got stuff going on in my life, I still have to show up as the leader. I still have to show up as the cheerleader. I still have to be the one that is helping everybody through the day to day. And so I think that's probably the hardest of.
How do you manage that?
I meditate.
Okay, that's what I wanted to get into.
I drink wine. No, I do. I used to do TM, which is transcendental meditation.
Yes.
And my husband and I did that. We went through a couple of years of really difficult personal family stuff. And that's when we discovered TM. And TM is a commitment. It's twice a day for 20 minutes. And there's a whole process on how you actually do the meditation. So that was a little, we did that for a while. It was tough on the life to have to take those moments away, which of course is the point of it. But anyways, now I do actually meditation in the evenings that helps me get to sleep. And it's guided meditation. And so that's a big part of it. I also journal, I write, I draw, I read trashy novels.
Turn off the brain, yeah. I mean, I can relate to the whole at nighttime because I'm always go, go, go. All the things in my head keep going. I keep circling through the solutions to the problems and all the things. So if you're always on and your brain is, you know, obsessive over all the solutions that you can have, so that you can be successful and creative and be there for your team, how do you, you know, take that respite to shut it off and, you know, regenerate? Because you have to show up the next day.
Practice.
Right?
Practice. And I don't always succeed, but I keep trying. You know what I mean? I mean, we're only human.
Yes.
So I have a personal question.
Oh.
So I am in the process of actually just starting to expand my business. So I want to go back to your pain points of, you know, you took on your first person, your first intern, your first project manager. Who was that for you? And what was that experience like shifting your business type to sole person to multiple people?
So my first employee was a gentleman that I just connected with. And he had no design experience. He just was smart and savvy and fun. And I was like, I want to spend my professional hours with this man. And he worked for me for a really long time. And not for a really long time. I shouldn't say that. Pause. He worked for me for a couple of years. And he decided he wanted to go back to school for architecture. And I was like, great. But he didn't want to work while he was in school. So we worked together for probably 2 years. He left to go to school and I hired another gentleman who came in, who had some design experience, also was really smart, and also had an education. So each time I kept kind of moving toward people that I think were more focused on the design world and running a business. And as I started to hone in and as the work was coming in and we were marketing more, getting more work, the more work you have, that means you have to hire more people, right? Mm-hmm. Some people turn away work. Remember, design world domination. I don't turn away work, all right? I just hire more. So that was my philosophy. So it always goes back to who you want to be as a professional and where you want your company to be. That has really got to be the first mm-hmm. thing that you answer for yourself. Because then these questions will answer themselves for you.
So Amy, you're going to, she said, like her, she'll ask her employees that, Crystal will ask her employees that. And if they don't know, she says, get back to them in about 10 business. You're going to email Kristen about 10 business days. Right?
Yes. I want your plan in 10 days.
I've done that exercise, but I am not executing on it because I'm so busy with what's currently going on. So I have to like brush away the things that aren't serving me to then go for the dream. I feel like that's what's happening in my own life, it's hard to say. I'm a yes mm-hmm. person too. So it's very hard to say no to things that aren't necessarily serving that vision, while also growing it in the direction I want to. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah. And what I will tell you, and that's the second, because I think you said what are the top three things you tell to mm-hmm. young. The second thing I tell to my young designers as a mentor is razor sharp focus. Everything else needs to get out of the way.
Yeah.
Like if you have three different businesses, they should either be serving your final goal or they need to go in the trash can.
So the three different businesses, though, while you were growing your team, you were still hosting.
Yes, but that was serving my final goal, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the hosting was helping me get into the rooms with people like Vanilla Ice mm-hmm. and Robert Irvine, and helping me to get, you know, in front of potential clients mm-hmm. or at least be able to brag about these things that I've done to potential clients, right? That's what network. It comes down to, mm-hmm. yeah. you know? So there, everything you're doing has to be serving the goal.
So how does the future look like for Krista Holmes? What is your goal in the next 5 years?
My goal is to be a true creative director. I would like to step back from the day-to-day pain of every single force that comes at me, you know, every division that needs me. I'd like to really be in the room solving creative problems with my team. And I'd also like to be doing more fun things like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you're,
I love that.
You're, as part of the world domination, you're building that team, that structure around you to be the creative director. And yeah. Vesta Homes and the team that you built before that was part of that growth,
part of the vision and growth, and, yeah. you know, yeah.
World domination.
World domination. Oh my God, I just got that. What was that cheering movie? You know the cheering movie that started with the world domination?
Yeah. Okay, oh my God. Wait, is that Step Up?
No, it's not Step Up. It's another one. But it's like Kristen Dunst was in it, or Kirsten.
Oh, say. Yes.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
I don't know why that just like shot into my head. Like, world domination. we're gonna clip that in here.
Yeah. We must.
I want to go to one of our cheesy questions here.
I love cheesy questions. Bring it.
So we already talked about world domination. What does having it all mean to you now?
I think it changes all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think at the end of the day, for me, I have a 15 and 17 year old. Having it all is being able to do what I love mm-hmm. and still laugh with them a lot at the end of the day. And I really, so that's important. Mm-hmm. That balance is super important to me. I don't want to be a mom who's not there. Mm-hmm. And that dream and that vision is coming true because I make sure that it is, you know. Did that answer your question? No.
Yeah, no.
Do you ever feel guilty, or maybe not now, but as you grow the company and you're making all these dreams reality, do you ever feel guilty of working too much and not being there enough for your children?
Like every day, girl.
Every mom, right?
Every single day.
It's always
a situation,
yeah.
Like I miss basketball games. My husband always goes to the games. My son is a baller.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm a baller mom.
FYI.
love that. And so I don't miss, you know, I try not to miss as many games as possible, but I do miss them. And I feel, you know, and my daughter, when she's going through stuff with her friends or, you know, issues with school, mm-hmm. you know, I can't always be there, but I do everything possible in my power to be there. But we're both very driven to be client, we're both driven to be parents that are present.
Yes.
But that has to be part of what having it all is for me.
Yeah. So having that that work-life balance, hypothetically, that thing that exists somewhere in life.
Yes.
You have to carve it out for yourself, you're saying.
Yeah. And like, I do need to have really good wine in my wine fridge. That's part of having
it all.
So
wait, what's your favorite wine?
Red or white?
Oh my God, I don't discriminate. I'm just saying. I don't discriminate. I do run by the philosophy of if it's really expensive, it's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you guys know?
Similar. Yeah, I will share one thing that breaks that rule, but I guess.
Typically with wine, it's tends to be the case.
Yeah, it tends to be the case.
Okay, I love this.
I go to the expert. I go to the people that know more than me. And I'm like, okay, but what's that outlier? I'm curious. Like, I want to know what it is. So like, we'll go get it and we'll compare.
Ooh, I like fun. That.
It's like a taste test moment.
I feel a girl's night coming about.
That would be amazing. If you're up for it,
with your busy schedule of carving out life for your family, if we're involved in that, I'm okay with that.
Yes.
Listen, having it all, I read this book called The Happiness Project. And having it all, they found happiness comes. This woman went all over the world. She talked to every single expert, psychologists, gurus, coaches, teachers, everybody who knows something about happiness. And what she found literally at the end of the book is we need to be in the presence of other human beings to be happy. Like, we need to be with each other.
Oh, yeah.
Community. In the room, not on social media, not, you know, on screens or whatever. We need to be together, and that's where we actually find the most joy.
I love that. Is so true.
So girls' night it is.
And collaboration versus competition, right? Collaboration, I've learned so much in the last few years, especially how community and helping each other really goes a long way.
It's true. And actually, I was saying that a lot when the acquisition was happening. I was saying, actually, collaboration is the new competition, because now in all industries, but especially in interior design, there is a lot of private equity funding, Kelly Wurstler and, you know, McGee and Company and Kravit and all these big names in interior design are joining forces. And it's the way of the future.
Yeah,
it really is. It's important to get together and create something special. And I love that collaboration is now how we compete in the market.
Yeah. You're also borrowing. You said your husband does acquisitions and mergers, right? So I think it's really true that, you know, you're thinking design world domination, but you're also kind of, not that firms don't get acquired, it does, but it's by like other interiors firms or other like architecture firms. So you're kind of borrowing a business model from other industries, which is super smart, you know, because there are some flaws with how the AEC world does business. Kind of, it stresses us out. So to borrow a business model from maybe like the tech industry or something else, you know, is really smart. It will only lead to your success.
And I guess I want to ask you just a few last questions. Since you seem to have everything figured out, I want to pick your brain.
Hold up here. Right?
The master, I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
You look amazing, obviously.
Thank you.
So how do you manage to have your very successful business, being a mom, and also taking care of yourself, like exercising? Like, do you have any tips of how can we carve some time? Because I am a mom of a three-year-old. So it's always a challenge for me to be consistent at working out or just setting an hour aside for me to be consistent at, you know, going to yoga, whatever it is for myself.
I think you can't do it all. I hate to say that, but you have to choose things that are important that you can fit in. That's number one. Like, I haven't worked out in like almost 3 months, but I do get my hair done and I do get my nails done. But, you know, so you have to decide what's important to you. And working out is important to me.
Yeah.
The way that I'm going to get back to that, and this is an anomaly. Normally, I am a workout queen. I fit it into my schedule. And the way that I've been able to do that is to put it on my calendar.
Yes.
And it has to be the perfect time, right? Like, I would say, okay, I'm coming home at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Whatever phone calls I have, I'm doing on the Peloton. Then I shut my phone off at 5 and I cook dinner. So it's like, or it's first thing in the morning before anybody's up, but it has to go on your, or it's at lunchtime.
Yeah.
But it has to go on your calendar and you have to do it. The reason why I haven't been is because I've been so busy with all of these really fun things, the podcasts and, you know, the panels and, you know, all the traveling. And I decided that I was going to replace that with some more vacation time. So
good.
I was able to
you.
Work a few more hours so that I could get the vacation time in.
Yes.
So it is a balance. And I think you have to decide what the most important things are for you.
Yeah, that's a great tip, though. I'll start doing that. I have like 2 days a week. I have this in my calendar. I'm like, I have to get to it. I'm like 80% there.
Yes.
Did you get that? Did you get that from Gretchen Rubin's podcast? She talks about that a lot with her sister. Like,
oh, yes.
Put it on your calendar. And her sister's like, yeah, I put it on my calendar, or I set the alarm to go to bed early. And then like her sister's like her project kind of.
Yeah.
They are hysterical.
They're so funny.
I love them so much. And yes, she is all about like organization, writing it down, getting it on the schedule.
Yeah.
I think that's. It has to be part of the mindset.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It has to be. Absolutely.
I just recently like finished some test and I really loved like anything I could do that there was like a physical activity in addition to like watching tutorials or, you know, like if I can put it on the link that I sent, Speechify, so it can read it to me while I'm like cleaning or something.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Like I, because like, you know, with our in our profession, you sit a lot.
Yes.
And I have ADD, so I have all this pent up energy where I'm like, in addition, I've got the stress of like those exams coming up, you know. So if
well,
I can,
he's over. It's
So if I can do like what you did is like, you know, do it on the Peloton or something like that. Oh, and the Peloton is like, you can't hear it. Treadmill, you can hear.
Not if you get a Peloton tread.
Ooh.
Just saying.
Oh,
just saying.
So maybe that's
the new ones are quiet. So I do calls on the tread sometimes too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm sure you get to decompress being in there. If you're not on a call, can you really? Or your mind goes very creative?
I think my mind tends to run when I'm doing some activity. So I tend to if I'm working out, I tend to choose the people like the trainers that are going to like yell at me, like military life.
Get you back to the
because then I'm like, okay, I'm here. I got it. You know,
I have a similar mindset where I need to be yelled at to like get it and get it kicking in gear. Yes. Like it's so
because then I wander. It's like, no, get back. Amy, no more daydream.
Amy, how many times did I tell you not to wear green?
Oh, yeah. Like she's told me so much because we have green screens in the studio.
Oh, yes.
She's like, don't wear your green stuff because I love green.
Oh,
I love the green moment. Yeah,
I do too.
Yeah. It's
I love the green moment. It's the color of money.
Where are your colors? What would you say are your colors?
World domination.
My colors? I love pink.
Pink? Oh,
pink
here
is
we go.
My color.
You're
I don't
in the
know.
Right place. The Real Pink Diaries.
Yes.
There
actually
go.
Perfection.
Perfect. Perfecto.
I have a question about the acquisition, and I know this is stepping back, and Amber, I don't know if this is appropriate or if I want to.
Just say it.
Go, girl.
Did you come out of that being able to own your name and your brand because your company is Krista Homes? And I know that's very like specific.
Yeah. And no, I own my name.
Wow. Awesome.
I own my name.
You are very desirable then.
Yeah.
So you're like, this is my condition, accept
this
it.
This is what I want and this is what I'll get.
Do you own your designs as well?
I don't think so. I think the design is now owned by the corporation.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But that makes sense.
Yeah.
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 But the name, like if you're Dolly Parton, you don't give up Dolly Parton.
No, you don't.
Yeah. No, you don't.
No, yeah. Dolly is Dolly. There's only one.
And Krista Holmes is Krista Holmes.
That's right.
Always be.
Yeah. And Dolly Wood is Dolly's.
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
She owns it. That's true.
But I don't know how, I wonder what the structure is with Dolly Wood. And she kind of came in to like help a struggling theme park.
Mm.
So I wonder in that contract negotiation if she kind of owned the rights to Dolly Wood. And she probably did if you think about the Whitney Houston of it all. You know that story?
No.
The I Will Always Love You, right?
Yeah.
So Elvis wanted to record I Will Always Love You. And I guess she retains the copyright of all of her songs.
So he didn't sing it because he couldn't retain the copyright of it. And yeah. So she kept it. And now it's valuable because she was able to give Whitney Houston that opportunity.
Oh.
And she made some bank on it. So good for her.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So there's a lot of value in maintaining that ownership. Yeah. And I commend you for that accomplishment. You.
Creating the value for yourself, though. I have a question on that. So you went luxury. You went high-end luxury. Right. Mm-hmm. So what was the value they saw in you that you've created for the market? Like in terms of like, what is the services you provide to create that value that people see in you?
Well, luxury is really a lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. It's a sensibility that takes a great amount of expertise to fully understand and comprehend. Not a lot of people can deliver at that level. And so they knew that that was high value because that is something that it just takes years of understanding and knowing what that means. Now, I was on a panel yesterday talking about how the $100 and $200 million house is becoming more and more popular to billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of luxury, which I'm pretty close to that, is becoming more of the norm. And the reason is because our homes are a character in our lives. Our homes are part of who we are. And especially since COVID, like when you think of Sex and the City, New York City was a character in that show, right? It's the same with our homes. Mm-hmm. Like it is such an important part of our environment. And at a luxury level, that takes a very high level of experience and expertise to understand that type of client.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's the psychology of the luxury.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, thank you so much. This was a total honor. I mean, we're so, so grateful for the opportunity to be able to sit down here with you and also hear your thoughts, your tips, like your story. Is definitely so inspirational.
And have a girl's moment maybe later on. We don't know.
Yeah, maybe some wine moment.
I look forward to your world domination and buying and buying stuff at Target for you with Krista Holmes on it. I see that coming sooner rather than later personally.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So where can people find you?
Well, people can find me at KristaHolm.com. Mm-hmm. You can also find me on Instagram at KristaHolm. And I just started my own personal Instagram account at Krista.Alterman. So come follow me. I need people.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I already started following her.
You have good content on that and you have a fabulous team to help you curate wonderful social media threads.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it is all about the people.
It's about the people that help the people.
Yes, it is.
So important. We can't do this alone. We really can't. Yeah. We need each other.
Let's keep getting together.
For sure. Well, thank you so much. And thank you to everybody who's listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah. Thank you. What an honor to be with you ladies today. Yeah. I'm excited for the future.
Who knows?
We do.
Bye.
Hi. Bye.
Thank you for listening. We had so much fun and we look forward to spending time with you in the next episode.
Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Real Pink Diaries. You can also find us on YouTube. Check out our show notes for additional ways to connect with us.
See you next time.
Bye.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.